Hey there. Let's get rolling here. VGK Insider Show, Fox Sports Las Vegas. Do not adjust your radio dial. Chris Chapman filling in for Ryan, the hockey guy Wallace. He is on the injured list tonight. So I'll be here with you for the VGK Insider Show, as well as the pre and post and intermission reports as we get you ready for the Golden Knights and the Seattle Kraken at Climate Pledge Arena. Puck will drop at 7 o'clock. And that one, however, should let you know I am not alone for these next 2 hours. I'll be joined, or I am being joined, I should say, by my great friend. You can catch her every morning from 7 to 10 on Raider Nation Radio, along with Clay Baker and one of my favorite writers, Vinny Bonsignore. And I say that because he's a Mets fan like me. But Lindsay, thank you so much for jumping on with me.
Of course. I'm really excited to be here, and hopefully the Golden Knights can keep the good mojo going that they had generated just the other night, because they certainly could use some continuity, a streak, a positive streak, dare I ask. But it has been a hectic couple of days with NFL free agency, so I'm sorry if I'm scatterbrained a little.
Yeah, you certainly are busy, because it's like, if you're not doing this, obviously you have the daily show, but you and I did throw the flag from the Golden Circle at the TI, the sports book there at the Treasure Island, or TI.
Yep.
Every Saturday for 20 weeks.
The Golden Circle sports book.
Every Saturday morning you and I did that show. So it's been since like the start of the NFL playoffs, I feel.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah, it's been a month and a half.
Since you and I have done a show, but you know, it's like I always enjoy being out here with you, and we got a good one tonight because Golden Knights and Kraken, it's a huge, huge game, I think, for both teams.
Isn't every game for the Golden Knights at this point a huge game?
As we get down the stretch, yeah, but I think this is a bigger one for the Kraken, and coming up at 4:30, we are going to talk to John Forslund. He is the television voice of the Seattle Kraken. Of course, you catch him on the Turner broadcast sometimes during the regular season and during the playoffs as well, so he is one of the best in the business, and he'll help us set the table, and he'll tell you why it's probably a bigger game for the Kraken than it is for the Golden Knights, although, like we said, it is a huge game for both teams right now. Golden Knights with an 8-point lead in the standings over the Kraken. However, Seattle has one less game played. So
only six clear of the Blues, though, right?
Yes, yes. And the Blues...
Blues and the Wild, technically.
I'm assuming they ended up beating the Bruins last night. I know they were up 4-0 going into the third period in that one. Hard to have seen. I turned it off as I
was left watching House because it was topical.
House? I love House. That show.
I needed some wit.
You know, Hugh Laurie is a fantastic actor, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw him in Stuart Little. Should have won an award.
But he was... Absolute tragedy. He's like a classically trained Shakespearean actor. And he was on a show called Blackadder with Rowan Atkinson, who many people probably know as Mr. Bean. Rowan Atkinson actually
that guy.
Talked in that show. But different topic for another. By the way, very quiet here.
Oh, that's okay. is that we're professional at filling space with our voices.
But this is a type of game that could be a huge swing for both teams. We mentioned the 8-point lead for the Golden Knights in the standings over Seattle. So clearly it's a game the Golden Knights want to win, push that lead up to 10 points over Seattle. Kind of maybe not put the nail in the coffin, but start to put it somewhere close with a 10-point advantage, which would then be 17 games remaining for the Golden Knights. But for Seattle, it's desperation time as well. Golden Knights want to be playing better going into the playoffs down the stretch run. So we talked about it yesterday, myself and Ryan, but you know, we know that your knowledge of the game is incredible. You play the game at a very high level. Got to hang out with you a little bit Saturday night at T-Mobile watching the Red Wings and the Golden Knights. And I just want to ask you what you saw in that game that maybe made you feel positive.
Oh, let me tell you how excited I am about the addition of Noah Hanifin, because I don't think I've seen somebody try to attempt a hook and ladder backhand pass as many times as he did in that Red Wings game. I think by the second period, there's at least three or four attempted passes. And what I'm really excited about Noah is – is I think that he's a time manipulator. I think that he's a guy who has a really efficient skating stride. He doesn't need to take these big loops with his skates to get going, and so you can start late and still get back to your gap, but then also that allows you to have a little bit more time, and he has vision that I think is comparable to what we kind of talk about with Mark Stone, where you can kind of see the play just a hair ahead of everyone else, but even if it's just a hair, that's going to allow you, you know, that head start to maybe make a pass that typically wouldn't be advised for really anybody else, but because you're Noah Hanifin, because we know that you're equipped to make up for mistakes, and because you have the vision, you allow him to do that, because that would be taking away something that makes him special. It's like, oh, Jack, you know, don't wheel the puck up yourself and drive to the net. Stop it. We don't want you to do that. And so I think his presence is something that I've really tried to zero in on since the trade deadline, because I think so much of this team's problems has stemmed from inconsistent responsibilities on the blue line and what this team has had to do to survive this season and be in the position that they are, which isn't advantageous by any stretch.
Yeah, me and Ryan kind of talked about it a little bit yesterday with Noah Hanifin, and that his ability to jump the play, it seems like even though what's interesting is he doesn't know the system like 100%, but we talked to him after the game on Saturday, and I asked him about the system and, you know, the familiarity with it, having seen Vegas as much as he has over, you know, his career, and he mentioned that they play a pretty similar system.
That's a lot of hockey. You'd be surprised how non-creative a lot of this game is in this league.
But like he was saying, like, the system isn't too different, and me and Ryan were talking a little bit about, if you're Bruce Cassidy, you kind of let him be that guy. Like, you let him kind of make the instinctual play as opposed to the system play, because he's got the capability of making something out of nothing, or, you know, if he makes that jump, as you mentioned, just a hair ahead, it starts a breakout the other way. And
right.
So, you know, the addition of him was really interesting. Obviously, the addition of Anthony Mantha, I think he's still adjusting a little bit. You know, there's
his presence isn't going to be as felt nearly as strongly as Hanifin's is, just because there's simply more forwards on the ice. Their ice is divvied up differently.
Yeah, and so
and he's not the same caliber
with Hanifin as well. You have obviously the ability to not that Mantha's not a power play guy as well, but with Hanifin it gives you another defensive stick on the power play, and I like the idea of having both Pietrangelo and Hanifin on power play too, because it leaves you with your two best, and I guess Shea Theodore could probably make a case as well, but he's going to be on PP1. But with Hanifin and Pietrangelo out there for PP2, it gives you a little bit of advantage when you're on the tail end of that power play and the power play ends.
Right.
And you have your two of your three best defensemen out there on the ice for
Well,
that.
Do you know why I love Hanifin on that power play, specifically with Alex Pietrangelo, not Shea Theodore? Because that puts Hanifin on top, or at least that's what I saw the other night. I'm not sure if that's going to be on a rotational basis. You know, if Pietrangelo has that puck and he's the puck carrier, does everybody shift towards him? But I think so much responsibility is put on his shoulders in all three zones in every single situation, and he gets to, like, hero ball mode a little bit too quick for me, Alex Pietrangelo. That's where it's like he's that good of a player. He's that type of personality. But then when you take that designated responsibility, make it all happen from the top of the zone, because when the power play is ran from the top of the zone, it's really not that successful. At least not when Alex Pietrangelo is running. It's not because he's not a great hockey player, but he doesn't think the game the same way that Noah Hanifin does.
Yeah.
And so I like that deviation, or I should say that differentiation, and how that could maybe inspire some new rhythm, some different looks, especially when you're looking for lanes as you're hoping to draw penalty killers off of their marks, make them make decisions, and how you make them make decisions is getting that puck down low, making them turn around, not face the other end of the ice, and guess, all right, how hard am I going to pressure? How hard am I going to hit this gap? Or am I going to stay integrated with this system? This is the same question as the Golden Knights are asking themselves when they're in their defensive zone, where they've gotten a little bit loosey-goosey at times, we'll just say, especially from the center position. And so that's what Hanifin's addition is, that it's this calming presence that hopefully takes some of the pressure and the responsibility and maybe the unnecessary self-inflicted urgency that some of this team's top players have been having to deal with this entire year.
Now, we went down with the power play, and I want to ask you, because Friday when we saw the team, The top power play unit was Chandler Stephenson, William Karlsson, Jonathan Marchessault, Jack Eichel, Shea Theodore. But in the course of the game on Saturday night, Bruce Cassidy moved Ivan Barbashev up to play on that top unit, Chandler Stephenson down. And I like it because it was something I suggested to Ryan, because you have that continuity with Barbashev, Marchessault, and Eichel. And then you look at the number two unit, you've got Stephenson, Waugh, and Mantha. Just the power play looked much better on Saturday. Maybe as good as they've looked in a long, long time. They didn't score, but I thought in general the two units, they gave you a reason to be positive. So when you saw the power plays operating on Saturday, how confident were you that this could be something we see going forward and that maybe this is going to be something that's going to help them click going forward?
I mean, I'm confident if they start doing what they call the little things more consistently in the game, because I just think the Golden Knights have really struggled with offensive zone retention. And it's a little bit easier on the power play, obviously, because you have the man advantage. But if you're not feeling integrated, if those passes aren't going tape to tape, if the cycles aren't happening, I mean, that's what really makes the Barbashev, Eichel, and Marchessault line so deadly, is that they are so good at getting that cycle going up the wall. Who's going to be the one to pass? Who's going to be the one that's going to dart? Where is it going to go? You're not sure, and you get put in the spin cycle, and before you know it, you're all gathered together, and they have time and space to finish that puck. And so when the Golden Knights have struggled, at least since I've kind of come back into the fold, since football season has taken a back seat, I just noticed so many one-and-dones where, you know, Keegan Kolesar has the puck and he's trying to break into the offensive zone and there's nobody else around him. There's, you know, four of the opposition surrounding him. And that's not like a knock on Keegan Kolesar. It's also not a knock on the players, because they're changing because they've been in the defensive zone for so long. So by the time they get out, I'm gassed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that's where all these, like, little situations, whether it's a breakout pass that hasn't been made over the last couple months that does get made now, which means we don't get caught for the next 3 minutes in this zone, and that alleviates things for our goaltenders, too, because I think in the last couple games we've seen, you know, some great strides from Aiden Hill and calming him down and giving him the looks that – I think allow him to operate at his highest level. And so a lot of that has to do with proper zone management, and the Golden Knights haven't been able to achieve that offensively as consistently as they need to, but hopefully the power play can be that catalyst, because it's not about scoring on the power play, despite what people like to say. It's about generating momentum, and sometimes that just means you hold their nose to the fire or their feet, whatever body part, and you say, you're going to grind it out for 2 minutes and get stuck, and then you're going to be gassed for the next, you know, two or three shifts, and that's where we're going to strike. They need to get back to that level of play, but you know, that takes a certain level of command, and you got to earn that.
Yeah, some of the issues that I saw previous to Eichel returning was there were a lot of one and done possessions. Like, they weren't getting second looks. They got one the other night. They scored a goal. Marchessault with the rebound off of the Eichel shot, and you have to think with Jack and the way he's able to control the puck.
Yeah. That's off the far pad, getting the spray, that rebound. Tale as old as time.
Like, Jonathan Marchessault, to me, like, he's an opportunist. And Jack Eichel creates opportunities for Jonathan Marchessault and Ivan Barbashev. Like, that line was so good in the playoffs last year. And you just hope that they're able to recapture some of that magic that they found. But I think you look up and down the lineup, and you know, you're starting to get healthy if you're the Golden Knights. And we're going to talk a little bit about it more in hour two. But the other aspect I've seen the last two games, and I know that they did lose the Vancouver game, but
they got skated out of their own building in the Vancouver game.
Yes, but what I was going to get to was Aiden Hill, the last two games, looks like he maybe has found some of his mojo back. Like, I thought he was good in the Vancouver game. Really, really tough to blame him for any of those goals in that one. In the Detroit game, I mean, you look at the goals that the Red Wings scored. You had both two tips, one by Rasmussen, one by JT Compher, both from missiles from the blue line by Moritz Seider. I mean, Not a whole lot you could do about that. And then the third goal, which was a really unfortunate broken play where Nick Waugh's taken out by Keegan Kolesar, who lost an edge. You have Whitecloud do a great job blocking a shot. He goes down, and basically it's a 5-on-2, and the Red Wings are able to capitalize on that goal. But What have you seen from Aiden Hill these last two games that, maybe give you some confidence that he's starting to find his game as well?
Well, he's so dependent on his reads and his ability to see the shot as clean as you possibly can. Because I will say he's a very effective netminder when shots are sent through from long range. He's really good at gobbling up tips. And that's where if Aiden Hill is dropping rebounds and not right on top of it, that's when I start to get worried. Because, you know, the reads and stuff, you can work your way back into that rhythm. That's part of the goaltending practice, the spirituality that is goaltending. But there's also that, again, urgency where you're recognizing not only did I not just make the save the way that I wanted to in a not clean save, but I'm not instantly right on top of it. And I just feel that he went through a little bit. After he came back, he was all right, and then kind of lost his way a little bit in terms of his internal rhythm and watching that puck all the way in, because there are so many little things that can throw a netminder off where even if you just react a split second too early on a completely clean shot from the point, instead of it going straight into your stomach and then, you know, you close the gates with your elbows, you call that a nice little smother save. Instead, I react a little bit too early, my hands get slightly in the way, and now it goes off a part of my glove, and now it's dropped right in front of me. But my body has proceeded to go in its shell. But oh wait, there's people whacking away at things, right? And so that's where him just finding that traction, that you're always looking for that feel. Goalie's such a feel position. And I think the Golden Knights have done a better job at times. They've certainly not been the house that the protective house that they were last season in front of the net and picking up bodies and rebounds and broken plays. But there's a lot of other ways that this team needs to get better. And so sometimes goalies have to make saves that they're not supposed to kind of inject belief back into the team. And he wasn't really getting many of those over the last couple weeks. But the last couple games, he's looked a lot more settled. And I think that's also going to reverberate through the rest of the lineup, because my coach would always tell me, you know, you're the barometer. If you start freaking out, if you're going after the refs, if you're going after players, how do you think your team is going to react if you're the starting goalie? So it's your the stoicism is the name of the game. He leans back in the net, so I don't know what kind of stoic he is. But I have faith in him figuring it out and them being the best option for this team in goaltending, because I know there's a lot of people questioning that around the trade deadline.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because you mentioned him leaning back against the goalposts and or against the
yep,
net,
kicking
the net there.
Kick in the heels.
Yeah,
I'm just like,
and,
all right.
And like he does it when the Golden Knights are going the opposite direction with the puck too. Mm-hmm. Like as soon as that puck exits the zone,
or they're fighting. That's the funniest. Yeah, when they're fighting and he's not involved.
Yeah, you see him back there just
the lollipop
hanging out. But how much of because he was playing really well, mm-hmm. then he got injured, he came back, and he basically lasted less than 10 minutes in that Ottawa game. Then he was out for a period of time.
Yeah.
Came back. How much does the injury maybe play into how he was playing coming back the second time? Like, is it something that's going to be in the back of his mind constantly? And maybe now he's gotten more comfortable with his body,
yeah.
And he's able to play better?
Yeah, I think there for every person that's ever played sports at any level, when you get hurt, there's a few trust falls you have to go through with yourself, whether it's, you know, I gotta take a hit, right? I gotta see if I can hold up. And I think in similar ways, he went through that. You kind of have to learn where it's, you think you're ready, and then you go out there like, I'm not as ready as I thought, and all of a sudden something's off. And so that's going to create a little bit more uncertainty as well, that you thought that you were on this course to come back, here's the steps, here I am, and then 10 minutes, boom, I'm back to square one. Same thing happened to Logan Thompson last year, right? And I got questions about that process, but that's a different question for a different day, because goalie lower bodies, just your hips, your flexors, your groins, it's so touchy and you're so aware. Like, I was always very aware when something was just a little bit off. But then sometimes there's, you know, the placebo where it's like, well, am I feeling something that's off, or am I just looking for something to feel it within me? And so I'm not sure how sensitive he is in terms of like his mind-body connection and how he knows when it's ready and what he can command from it. But I know that there's trust falls you have to go through. And sometimes you think you go through 10 of them, you're like, I'm good. And then you let in a certain type of goal, or you get knocked around or something, you know, just rattles you a little bit. And then you're proving it again. That's where just like goalie is just trying to survive one moment to the next. At least that was for me. I hope some other people have discovered a healthier way of processing that position. but you have to be so dialed in and mentally locked in. It's certainly something that I think you have to work through just like anything else. It's a continuous thing. As much as it comes up in your brain, that's when you have to confront it, right? You can't avoid stuff.
Yeah, so. It's a very, like, people talk about the psyche of specific positions in mm-hmm. sports. And, you know, me still being relatively new, you know, I've been around this team for 7 years, but
right.
I consider that relatively new. You know, I watched the game as a kid and, you know, as an adult, I certainly liked it, but we didn't have a team here for so long, so it was hard for me to kind of latch on because my team, they're on the East Coast, so, like, I wasn't going to get the hockey package to
right.
come home and not be able to watch my team because I work so late. But the psyche of the goalie position, it's like, it's almost like pitcher in baseball, quarterback in the NFL, mm-hmm. point guard in the NBA, where you have to mentally, as well as being physically gifted, you have to mentally be able to block a lot of the distractions out. And like, it's so intriguing to me because Aiden Hill is such a fascinating human being. Like, mm. when you listen to him, it's almost, I mean, and I don't know, like, what he does off the ice.
We know the hockey personality.
Yes. But it's almost like he's kind of like a Zen master mm-hmm. in a way, because when you listen to him, he's so in tune with the mental aspect of the game. And like, if anyone, and I'm sure a lot of people listening watched that, you know, the Stanley Cup show that was on ESPN Plus
mm-hmm.
during the playoffs, and they got to see Aiden Hill and the coffee that he drinks, and he has these special coffee beans shipped in from Australia, organic, and all
but,
sorts.
But what do you think that provides him? Like, that to me, when I was hearing him talk about the coffee and the specific thing, it's the same type of tinkering that goaltending is. And it's also, I think we're all reaching for something to stabilize and feel that we have control over.
Yeah.
Because in goaltending, unlike the quarterback position, unlike pitchers, unlike kickers, I think kickers are a great comparable as well, and a point guard, you're not the one with the ball in your hands. You're the one that's cleaning up the mess.
Yeah.
And so with that comes a different level of acceptance. I on Fridays, we have a guest on the Morning Tailgate, Chris Thomas, who's a sports psychologist. And he and I are very similar in a lot of different ways, but we differentiate on a very specific type of principle, which is the concept of failure. And failure to me is an inevitability, right? We're human beings. It's something we're always going to run into in some capacity. And for us to expect perfection, even though I'm one of the worst perfectionists I know, is actually not logical at all. But it's great fuel. You still chase it because you're chasing the next rep, the next perfect save, the next perfect game, whatever. But in terms of the actual expectation of that result is faulty. Now, Chris says you shouldn't even say that you're a failure or interact with failure in any way. I disagree. I think that's avoidant because I know that I could do everything absolutely right as a goaltender and the puck could still end up behind my net. I also know that I've made about 15,000 saves that I had no business making, including 14 of them off the knob of my stick because it just happens to hit, you know? And those are the little things that you have to learn how to let go. Like, I started seeing a sports psychologist, I think, when I was in high school, and just trying to figure out how to deal with that failure, how to deal with failure under pressure with expectation. And so he is a Zen master. Everybody has to find their own brand of Zen because you can't really copy anyone else's because it's not going to feel the same to you. And so his obsession is coffee, right? Robin
yeah.
Leonard loves reptiles.
Yeah.
You know, Marc-Andre Fleury loves pranks.
Yeah.
you have a different – you're just about – you're trying to achieve a certain perspective, which is no one puck truly matters – unless it's the one that's coming at you right now. And then it's gone. You could have made the greatest save of all time, but it's also Tuesday night at practice and nobody saw it.
Yeah.
You know, and so you let it go. And I think Aiden, just based off of how he sits on that, he can let things go. Absolutely. But it's about finding that happy medium because as much as he sits back on the net, he'll mix it up. We've seen it, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so it's about finding equilibrium. And sometimes that means you push something 2 inches to the right or 2 millimeters to the left. It's whatever you need that day.
absolutely fascinating stuff. And, you know, we could talk a little bit. I feel like we could talk about this all day.
You're leading.
Yeah.
You're leading.
I mean, it's really, like, I am really big. Like, as I've grown in this sport, mm-hmm. I've really grown to appreciate the personality and, like, goalie position is, it's like.
We're such weirdos.
It really takes a special type of personality to play that position. I mean, you have the feisty ones like Jordan Binnington,
yep.
Patrick Waugh was feisty, and then you have guys who are just absolutely cool as cucumbers, and Marc-Andre Fleury was one, obviously Aiden Hill another. I mean,
right.
I grew up watching Martin Brodeur, but just a really fascinating position, and like I said, we could talk about this all day, but we
please,
can't.
Please, let's go. Two straight hours on just goalie philosophy, the enigmas.
We can't do that. We've got John Forslund, the television voice
right.
of the Seattle Kraken, coming up at 4:30. So we are going to take a break. Chris Chapman out here at Sierra Gold, Jones and Sunset, or Jones and the 215, whatever floats your boat. I'm out here with Lindsey Brown. I'm going to be doing the pregame, postgame, and the intermission reports tonight as we get you set for the Golden Knights and the Kraken. You are listening to the VGK Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas. We'll be right back.
We're back to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM.
All right, welcome back to the VGK Insider Show, Fox Sports Las Vegas. Chris Chapman out at Sierra Gold, Jones and Sunset here with Lindsey Brown, getting you set for the Kraken and the Golden Knights tonight at Climate Pledge Arena. And that was the voice of Jordan Eberle, forward for the Seattle Kraken, who is going to play his 1,000th NHL game tonight. And
here big week for him.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding. Signs a contract mm-hmm. extension on Friday, 1,000th game tonight. And here to help us set the table for that and talk a little bit about that milestone is John Forslund. He is the television voice of the Seattle Kraken. Of course, you could also catch him on TNT during the playoffs and the regular season as well. John, thanks so much for jumping on with us today. How you doing?
Hey, guys. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, not a problem. So, Eberle set to play his 1,000th game tonight. It's kind of the first really big milestone in Kraken history. So, how cool is it to be a part of that and to be in the rink and be in the arena as a guy reaches his 1,000th game in the league?
Well, you're right about it, because he's actually the second Kraken player to host 1,000 games, but the circumstances are far different. So in year number one, Mark Giordano was the captain of the Kraken, as you know, in year number one, and the majority of his games, except for a handful that first season, were played in Calgary. And, you know, the Kraken did all the right things in and around his 1,000th game to mark it in time and so on, but he was part of a surplus of players that were dealt at the trading deadline because the season was a goner, and Ron Francis wanted to retool for the second year. So this one here, this is a player who's played almost 300 games as a Kraken, has been a big part of their playoff success last season, scored the first ever overtime winner in the history of the team in Game 4 of Round 1, and day in and day out has been a leader, a very quiet leader, but an example setter for this team. And probably, you know, in the conversation to be named captain, if not the unofficial captain of this team, they've yet to do that. They may moving forward. But there was a lot of swirling rumors about Jordan Eberle last week in and around the trading deadline because of his expiring contract. But he and the management were able to come to a conclusion and re-up and get a two-year extension to the liking of both parties, and off we go. So he's a big part of this team. He may be the second guy to hit 1,000 games in a Kraken sweater, but it's far different. This is a Kraken player through and through.
Yeah, you mentioned the extension, and he's 33, but he's still very productive. 37 points on the season, 14 goals. So the contract will take him to 35. So just how important is it for a guy like Matty Beniers to have someone mm-hmm. like Eberle on the team to kind of help him grow and maybe set the table for Matty to be the captain one day?
Well, I think that could be the plan, and just might be. But, you know, there's a host of young players that are going to be coming in here over the next few seasons. You know, Ron Francis, the GM, has a long-range plan. They've been careful and calculated with their draft choices. They've stockpiled draft choices. They have a really good prospect pool. They're going to get to those players very soon. And when you do so, It pays off to have a player like this, you know, in the fold. Yanni Gord's another guy like that. Adam Larson. You go down the list, they have a lot of players. There's still 11 players on the roster from the original team. And they all have not only pedigrees, but playoff pedigrees too. And I think that helped them last year when they upset Colorado in seven games in round one and took Dallas to seven games in round two. You know, everybody's looking at the Kraken as the newbies on the block, but really a lot of the players had already been there, won cups, played deep and all that. Eberle certainly has done that. So that helps. It helps younger players, the next generation of Kraken players that come through. That's going to be a big part of it. And again, as you get into the second year of this deal, you know, he gets to another stage of his career. You know, maybe it ends up being one-year contracts until he reaches the end. And he's far from that point as we watch him every game now. And then maybe someday ends up working for the team. I know they think highly enough of him in that regard that might be on the front burner someday. So we'll see. But he's a big piece of the Seattle Kraken. There's no question about that.
John, Lindsey Brown here. We had the pleasure of speaking just a few months ago, and we were talking about Matty Beniers and his maturation of his game as we're kind of discussing about his potential for the captaincy. But we were kind of seeing how this year shook out, because when we talked to last time, he was minus 13 at the time. He's now up to minus 6. But just in terms of how he's been able to evolve, he had an injury setback earlier in the year, but has he improved at the rate that you would expect for someone who's playing a lot of top-line minutes on a team that did sell at this year's deadline for the most part?
Yeah, you know, Lindsey, it's great to speak with you again. He's one of these players that, you know, has been humbled by the league, but he's smart enough to realize where he needs to go. And I think it's up to the team next season, you know, looking at the offseason, what they might do to insulate him a little bit better. And maybe they're going to need to have to go out and get a number one center, okay, whether it be through trade or free agency, whatever they decide to do. I think Matty, if they come back next season, he's slotted as the two or three center, that's going to help him. That's going to help him further his development. He's still only 21. He has to play a lot of minutes, and with the expectation of putting points on the board, that's really hard to ask. Would be great if it worked out, right? But it's really hard to ask of a second-year player to do this, especially when they start to press, struggle. You know, he's going to be going into the third year of his entry-level deal, so there's this contract extension thing I think he may be thinking about or did think about this year. But I think management got to him and said, hey, we're going to table that. Let's not worry about it. I think it was on the front burner after he won the Rookie of the Year last summer, and maybe it was on his mind this year. So they kind of pulled the strings back on it and said, you know, let's play the year out. Let's see what happens in the summer. We'll continue to talk and go from there. But, you know, he's trying to put a lot of things in compartments, and I don't think it's worked out in his best interest. But when we see him at his best, when we see him play the game like he can, you see a smart player. You see a really good two-way player. You see a player that's going to evolve into a 200-foot centerman someday, and you can win with this type of player. So that's the hope. Sometimes you have to have patience with the younger guys and watch them evolve.
Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show here on Fox Sports Las Vegas, being joined by John Forslin, the TV voice of the Seattle Kraken, helping us set the table for tonight's game up at Climate Pledge Arena. And John, Vince Dunn, you talked about young players, and Vince Young, I think, one of my favorite young defensemen in the league, although I guess now at 27 you could say he's now in the prime of his career. But he's been out, injured. He was on the wrong end of a vicious hit, and I think that's the play that kind of knocked him out. But what's the timetable looking like on his return? Because if the Kraken are going to make a run here at Vegas or Nashville, it seems like they're going to need Dunn in the fold.
Well, he is arguably their most valuable player. He was last year. He's put up another really good season to back up a new contract, so that's been good for him. And he was really playing well at the time of his injury. So it was in Calgary, and Martin Pospisil, you know, hit him from behind, hit him hard, drove him headfirst into the glass. A very dangerous hit, looked very catastrophic at the outset. The good news is he's back skating. Today was a full day with the group, not in a regular sweater, not a non-contact sweater. So that's a good sign. Hopefully that means either Thursday or Saturday I'm guessing here, but maybe we'll see him return to the lineup. It could have been really severe. The player was suspended for it. There's no place in the game for hits like that where the numbers are recognizable and the player just continues to finish the player from behind. We got to knock that out of the game, or the people have already been hurt, but somebody's going to be seriously, seriously hurt someday. So that's what the league's trying to legislate against as we move forward. That was one of those plays. But he's a big part of what they do, because not only, obviously, with his offensive skill set, he's going to be on one of the two power play units, but he kind of brings an activation from the back end that every team needs today. You look at all the teams that are successful, and the Golden Knights are in that vein, too. Your D-men have to activate and get involved in the offense. If it doesn't happen, you're not going to have a chance. And he's one of those players that when he's really on, he can be prolific. So, good for him. He's a 50-60 point guy annually, easily. And he's really matured a lot from his beginnings with the Blues, where they liked him as a young player, but they were kind of riding a roller coaster with him. They had numbers. They left him exposed, and that's how the Kraken got him in the expansion draft. But it was a good pickup, because you're right, he was younger, and he's still young at 27. He's just entering his prime.
Yeah, and if there's anything we know about the St. Louis Blues organization, Johnny, that is a roller coaster all of the time. I remember watching him, and I was like, gosh, this is a good player. And then when he was picked with Seattle, like, they really did a nice job. And another thing that they've managed, I think, pretty well, especially since Philip Grubauer, he's been back for about a month after he was dealing with some injuries. But another guy we talked about the last time we chatted was Joey Decord. And how he was manifesting his NHL career while wearing Kraken colored pads, even when he was holding down the fort down in the AHL club. But since then, he had the Winter Classic, which was an unbelievable performance. He had a big showing against his hometown Bruins last month as well. He's a gamer. He's a big timer, and he took his opportunity and ran with it. But his deal expires this summer, and Grubauer is signed through 26-27. Do you anticipate the Kraken trying to bring him back, or has he played himself into a bigger opportunity in a new market?
No, I think every effort will be made to sign Joey. I think they understand where he is. I think he understands where he is, too. He has got a great opportunity with this franchise to continue to take the next step. And what I mean by that is you're 100% right based on his body of work this season. For at least a 7-week period, he was elite. He was playing with elite goalies in the league in terms of numbers. When you look at all of his straight numbers, when you look at his fancy numbers, everything was, you know, at the top of the NHL. And that was in and around the Winter Classic when the Kraken were playing their best. That storybook night in Boston that you mentioned, that was unbelievable. But the next step for Joey will be the mental aspect of this position at the NHL level if he's going to be a bona fide number one. You know, that's the trick. I've been around for a while, as you know, and when you talk to goalies, and goalies who have played at a high, high level, they'll tell you that it's the mental thing that separates, you know, goalies from being a bona fide one at the NHL level or a really good two. And there's nothing wrong with being a really good two, because that's hard if you're that type of goalie, and that's going to be your bailiwick moving forward. For this player, he's got an opportunity to be a bona fide number one. Grubauer has kind of answered the call after the injury. He sees how well this young guy's played in his last 7 games, and he goes tonight against the Golden Knights. His save percentage is over 94% in his last 7 games, and his goals against as well south of 2. So Grubauer will see what he can do, and he's paid to be the number one goalie. So I think moving forward, to speak for them, and they don't ask me for any advice, they being the management,
and
that's a good thing. But I'll tell you what, I think both guys will be back next year, and they'll be able to work in tandem, and we can see around the league how you need two guys to really carry the water for you.
That's perfect, especially as Grubauer ages. I like the way you're
right.
Thinking. They should be bringing you on, John. You're making a mistake.
I'm good. Trust me. It's been almost 40 years. I'm good right where I am. I'm good.
Yeah, I was fascinated because I knew it, but I guess it's one of those things that I forgot. But you actually started with the Hartford Whalers, which is like, oh my god! Like
I'm so old, they don't have teams that I work for anymore. That's how old I am.
You're a legend, John.
They were actually the first NHL team I ever saw. I saw them play the Flyers at
Amazing
the old Spectrum.
Unis.
So,
ugh.
But
isn't that
John,
great?
Thanks so
good
much.
Good times
for,
there.
Oh, great times. Thanks so much for jumping on with us. And, you know, hopefully we get a great game tonight. And we'll see you next week when you're in town, because we play it. We see you again on Thursday of next week. So
yep.
See you then.
I'll be in town for the game Thursday, but I'll also be there on the weekend. I have Jersey and the Golden Knights on TNT on Sunday. So I'll see you guys there.
Early St. Patrick's Day game.
Yeah. And then I'm getting out of town just in time.
So yeah.
We have another game here on Monday. So we'll
busy schedule. John, thanks so much for jumping on with us. And like I said, we'll see you next week.
Thanks for having me, guys.
No problem, John. That was John Forslund, the voice of the Seattle Kraken. Unbelievable.
We have to try to disrupt
him.
His professionalism, right? If he's staying for
a few more
days
than
anticipated.
We may have to take him out for a couple drinks after that Devils game.
We might have to, especially after the Devils game. You might need
to
soothe yourself, honestly.
Well, I was in New Jersey, and Tyler Toffoli, who's now a member of the Winnipeg Jets, scored a hat trick against Golden Knights, of course, game winner in overtime.
That's why he's
to
with
seal
Winnipeg.
That hat trick. Yeah. But anyway. We're going to take a break. We'll be back to set up hour number two. You'll listen to the VGK Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Going from one hotel to the other, it feels great. It's going to be fun. Just getting to know the guys a little bit more. Obviously, going out to dinner with some of them and kind of hanging around the hotel and whatnot. So it'll be a positive for sure. And luckily enough, it's not too long of a roll.
Welcome back to the VGK Insider Show, Fox Sports Las Vegas. Chris Chapman rolling with you here at Sierra Gold, Sunset and Jones, or Sunset, the 215, however you or Jones in the 215.
Latitude, longitude,
yeah,
whatever.
However you want to set it up. But Lindsey Brown joining me today, Ryan Wallace out sick. He should be back tomorrow, we're hoping. Darren Millard expected to maybe join the show tomorrow as well. Not 100% positive on that, but there are some rumors circulating. But last segment we talked to John Forslund, and he mentioned that he'd been in the game for a really long time, and he was the broadcaster for the Hartford Whalers. At the time, the Whalers moved from Hartford to Carolina. Mm-hmm. On that team was the number one goalie, Sean Burke, who is now the goalie coach with the Vegas Golden Knights. So, of course, we come a little full circle, but shows how small of a world hockey is. But here's one for you. How many people grew up in the town that you, or how many people live in the town you grew up in?
Like 12,000.
12,000. I grew up in a town with about 70,000 people.
Okay.
There's a couple famous people that have come from my hometown. Piper Perabo, who of course was
Coyote
Ugly. We had a Super Bowl
huge
champ.
Huge fan of hers.
Yeah, she's a great girl.
Yeah.
She actually, her locker was next to mine.
Cheaper by the dozen and number
yes,
two.
Yes, yes, yes.
True
with,
talent.
With Steve Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And she was on that Covert Affairs that was on
Something
USA
like
Network.
That.
We also had a Super Bowl champion, played with the Buccaneers back, not the latest Buccaneers team, but back in the early 2000s.
The Dungy team?
The team that beat the Raiders.
Mm.
But there's a town in Alberta called Warburg. Now, from Warburg is Dave Haxtell, who is the coach of the Seattle Kraken. Warburg, Alberta, has 676 people. Why is that significant? Because this small town, with less than 700 people, not only produced Dave Haxtell, but also Marty and Lindy Ruff, who both played in the NHL. Lindy, of course, recently let go of his coaching duties with the New Jersey Devils. But 676 people, three NHL people from that small, small town. So it really kind of shows you.
Rink rats multiply. When there's one, there's usually two. And if there's two, there's usually five.
Now, Lindy and Dave, 8 years apart, they didn't grow up together. But,
but
Mark or Marty and Dave did grow up together. So pretty fascinating stuff. Is useless trivia. I throw it out there as we get you ready for the Kraken and the Golden Knights. Chris Chapman here with Lindsey Brown. We will set up hour number two. We'll hear from Bruce Cassidy.
Yes.
There is a returnee for the Golden Knights tonight. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about a potential returnee who we know is getting closer and closer to returning to the lineup for the Golden Knights. So I'm going to get Lindsay's thoughts on a couple of things around that. So sit tight. We'll be back. Hour number two, VGK Insider Show, Fox Sports, Las Vegas.